So one of the things that Haman did in order to arouse the anger of Ahasuerus against the Jewish people was he informed him, "V'lamelech ein shoyvel lehanicham. It's not profitable. It's not befitting for you to keep them around in your kingdom because the Jews are not respecting you properly." And one example that he gave of the Jews' contempt for Ahasuerus and the lack of respect was he told him, if a fly falls into their wine, they will remove the fly and drink the wine. But if you touch their wine, you've contaminated their wine and they won't drink it any longer. And that's, of course, the halacha of stam yenam, of wine that belongs. It was touched by a non-Jew. The Jews, of course, are forbidden from drinking that wine. And Purim wasn't only part of the Purim story, but one of the, the activities of Purim is chayv inish l'psumei v'puria. People are obligated to drink wine on Purim. So therefore, since drinking is part of Purim, it's part of the Purim story itself. That was one of the things Haman told Ahasuerus. I thought it'd take a few minutes to discuss the halacha of non-Jewish wine or stam yenam. So the Mishnah mentions in Maseches Vayedazar and Chavtes and Mabez a bunch of things that Chazal prohibited, and one of them is stam yenam, the wine that belongs, meaning regular wine, stam, regular wine of a non-Jew that was touched by a non-Jew. And the Gemara asks over here in the first line of Vayis Beis, Yayin Minogan, how do we know that it's prohibited? And the Gemara quotes from the Pasuk in Parshas Hazinu, Ashechel Zvachem Yochelu Yishtu Yein Nesicham, the Ma'zevach Asabano Af Yayin Nami Asabano. If a non-Jew, as part of his idolatrous practices, brings a sacrifice, and together with that sacrifice brings wine, what's known as Yayin Nesech, he did nisuch hayayin, he poured the wine in front of his idol, so then not only is the carbon, is the sacrifice that he offered prohibited, but the wine is part of the sacrifice too. That's what the Pasuk teaches us in Parshas Hazinu. That's with regards to Yayin Nesech. What does this have to do with Stam Yenam? Here we're discussing wine that is owned by a non-Jew, was touched by a non-Jew. What does that have to do with Yayin Nesech? And therefore, Rashi and Tosfos conclude that it sounds like from this Gemara that provides as a source for the issue of Stam Yenam, Yayin Nesech, regular wine that's owned by a non-Jew. The Gemara then jumps to wine that was used as a libation before an idol, as part of an Avodah Zarah, that it must be part of the, or one of the contributing factors at least, in prohibiting wine that was owned by a non-Jew or touched by a non-Jew is because a fear of nisuch. Maybe he will use it for his idolatry. And that's what Rashi writes over here. It is prohibited because perhaps it was used as part of his idolatrous practices. The problem is, it's raised by the Rishonim, is that a Gemara later on in Lamed Vav Mabei seems to provide an entirely different rationale for the prohibition of Stam Yenam. Nothing to do with Yayin Nesech. The Gemara there is discussing a whole list of items that Chazal prohibited, lest we come to socialize with non-Jews, and that will lead to intermarriage. So one of the items that are prohibited, that were to prevent socialization between non-Jews and Jews, is that they shouldn't eat together, and therefore they prohibited Bishul Akum, food that was prepared by a non-Jew, or Pasakum, a bread that was prepared, that was baked by a non-Jew. Because since I love the food so much, I love the bread so much, I'll come to marry his daughter in order so that I should have an endless lifetime supply of this fresh bread or of this delicious dish that he prepares. So Bishul Akum and Pasakum were prohibited lest you come to marry the preparer's daughter. Yayin Stam Yenam was part of that list. One of the activities they prohibited us from doing, lest it lead to socialization, is perhaps drinking with Nachum. We could discuss another time, drinking together with them bebeis mishtos in their bars and pubs. Another thing there, of course, was the wine itself. If it was owned by a non-Jew or handled by a non-Jew, I might come to marry his daughter so I could have an endless supply of this wine. And what will lead to the breaking down of those barriers of the stigma will be that we'll be, of intermarriage will be that we'll be drinking together and I'll be drinking his wine. So that was one, that's the reason why Stam Yenam is also. That's what the Gemara tells Lama Vavim Abbez is because, Val Yenam Mishum Binoy Sehen, lest you come to marry his daughter. So the Ramban there, and Tosfos earlier asked, well, which is it? Is Stam Yenam also because of Yayin Nesech, a fear that perhaps he used it as part of his idolatry and his Avodah Zarah, bringing an animal sacrifice or a wine libation, or is it prohibited because you might come to drink with him and, marry his daughter in order to have an endless lifetime supply of his wine? Is it Binoy Sehem or Chashash Nisuch? So Tais is back in Noyes Bezim, Chavtes Mabezim, Maskel Yayin, explains that it's really prohibited because of both. But the primary one is Binoy Sehem. That's what prompted them to make this Xer against wine that's owned by a non-Jew or to handle by a non-Jew. Is because you might come to marry his daughter if you're drinking together. However, that will only get you so far. That could generate an Iser Achila, we can't drink together or, you know, or eat together, the wine, but not an Iser Hana to derive other forms of benefit. That should have been permitted. But that's where Chashash Nisuch comes into the picture. Since that's an additional concern, maybe he actually used it for his idolatrous practices. Well, if he did, that would certainly be not only Aser B'Achila, but that would be Aser B'Hana as well. So we need both because each one contributes something else. The B'no Sehem, which is the primary one, gets you to the Iser Achila. Chashash Nisuch was introduced because that introduces also, you know, additional wrinkle and additional aspect, the dimension of the Iser Hana. The Ramban basically, more or less, says the same thing with a slightly different emphasis. The Ramban says over here, Oiz Dawid. Ramban says, no. Chashash Nisuch is not a real chashash. If this guy used it as part of his religion, do you think that he is sharing it with you and giving you to drink? This is sacrosanct. This is holy. He's not giving you or drinking even himself his religious items. So Chashash Nisuch is not really something that should have been risen to the level of concern. But the real reason is B'nai Sayyam, it'll lead to intermarriage. However, Chazal have a rule, whether it's applied entirely across the board or, you know, once in a while, and generally, you know, even though there might be exceptions to the rule, it's called the Tikkun Rabbanan Kein D'Oraisa Tikkun. Whatever Chazal established, they usually, or they try to, you know, for the most part, to pattern it after Dinim D'Oraisa. Called the Tikkun Rabbanan Kein D'Oraisa Tikkun. Whatever Chazal established as Zera D'Rabbanan, they attempt to fit it into the pattern, to the formula of Dinim D'Oraisa. Rav Shechter once told me that he sent a shir that someone was observing after he published his first two Sfarim. I was in Shir when Bikvei Hatzon was published. And someone reflected after publishing Bikvei Hatzon that his most recurring theme in all of his Sfarim, at least to that point, was called the Tikkun Rabbanan Kein D'Oraisa Tikkun. He didn't even realize, but in both Sfarim there's a simon called the Tikkun Rabbanan Kein D'Oraisa Tikkun. If you know Rav Shechter, it fits perfectly in with his view of halacha that it's a seamless system of consistency between Dinim D'Rabbanan and Dinim D'Oraisa. They all fit into the same pattern. Kol HaTorah Kula Inyan Echad Hu. That everything relates to everything else. So Dinim D'Rabbanan fitting into a pattern, D'Oraisa is a general attitude, right, and manner in which Chazal established Dinim D'Rabbanan. So which Din D'Oraisa is Yai Stam Yenom patterned after? Yes, it's true. What motivated is B'nai Seyam. But which category does it fit in? You know, where? How does it fit into the pattern of Torah D'Oraisa? The answer is it's patterned after Yai Nesech, which is because of, you know, Nisa D'Oraisa, if they use it as part of their Avodah Zarah, of course, the carbon, the sacrifice is also that, you know, this part of Avodah Zarah itself, and the wine also becomes part of that too. So Stam Yenom is patterned after Yai Nesech. That's why it's also about Noah, because it's patterned after Yai Nesach. So there is a Chashash Nisuch. Now that Chashash Nisuch is not significant enough to have warranted its own independent Issa D'Rabbanan. But once they were motivated by B'nai Seyam, the fear of intermarriage, and they needed to fit it into some grander scheme, they put it together with Yai Nesach, and that introduced the Chashash Nisuch. But what emerges is that we have an Iser of Achila, an Iser Hana, perhaps motivated by two different things. Iser Achila is B'nai Sehem, that's what will lead to intermarriage, that's, you know, the Iser Shisiya. And then the Iser Hana, which is because of the Chashash Nisuch, that perhaps, you know, it was used for their father's Zara practices. How relevant of a concern that is or not might be Machlekes Tesis and Ramban. But, you know, was that really what motivated it, or was it just a contributing factor after the fact? Either way, that's a whole separate part of the picture. What if it's not possible that this individual who's touching or handling the wine had in mind Avodah Zarah? It's not possible that they had in mind Chashash Nisuch. How do I know? Because the child is a tinoik, ben yomai. He's just born, and a baby is flailing about, and he touches wine. Is the wine Stam Yenam? For sure. Yes, he handles the wine. Stam Yenam. Is it also about no, also? What is the Isra Hana stems from? The Chashash Nisuch. Maybe he used it for the Avodah Zarah practice. The Tinok Ben Yoma. He doesn't have in mind Avodah Zarah. So says the Gemara over here in Avodah Zarah. Zayin Mad Aleph. Tinok Ben Yoma who osi yai nesech. Amal hu eimer da amri. Ana b'shesiyah b'hanah mi amri. Yes, it is Stam Yenam for Achila, but not, and Shesiyah, but not for the Iser Hana. Because there's no way he had in mind Nisuch. Can we understand? There's no way he had in mind Nisuch. So yes, Iser Achila, it is Stam Yenam, could lead to intermarriage. You never know, this child's going to grow up and want to get married. But not an Iser Hana. Based on that, the Rambam jumps. He says, Azoi, what if I have a non-Jew who doesn't worship Avodah Zarah? Maybe that's like the Tinoik, the little kid who there's no way he had in mind Chashash Nisuch because he's not in mind what he's moving, flailing around, not even thinking what he's, you know, what he's touching. playing with different things. He happens to play with wine. So maybe an adult who does understand what he's touching, but doesn't worship Avodah Zarah in the first place, well, then maybe the wine that he touches should be Sam Yenam for Iser Achil and Chesia, but not for the Iser Hana, because there's no Chashash Nisach. And that's what the Rambam writes over here. Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Vav, Hilchos Machol Sasurois. The Rambam believed that, and we could discuss this in other contexts, vis-a-vis entering churches and mosques, that Muslims, Islam is not Avodah Zarah. And they're not Oivdei Avodah Zarah. Now, it needs to be said, and this is parenthetical, our Avodah Zarah is different than their Avodah Zarah. What I mean by that is, for a Jew to convert to another religion, even if that religion is not technically classified as Avodah Zarah, vis-a-vis non-Jews, doesn't mean that it's permitted for a Jew to worship Islam, right? Chas v'shalom. Hari Bal Yavo, maybe, right? Rather than convert to another religion. Because Jews are obligated to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu only. Non-Jews are prohibited from serving Avodah Zarah. Very different. So is this called Avodah Zarah or not? That's a whole separate discussion than what is permitted for Jews, right? So what's called Avodah Zarah for us might not be the same what's called Avodah Zarah for them. That said, the Rambam feels that Islam is not considered to be Avodah Zarah for Bnei Noach, for non-Jews. It's a monotheistic religion. And therefore, and they also don't offer animal sacrifices, you know, wine libations. So therefore, the Rambam feels if a Yishmaeli will touch wine, yes, it will be prohibited in Achila and Shasia, because lest it will lead to intermarriage and breaking down of barriers between the communities, but it will not be also Bahana. There's no Chashash Nisuch. So have you understand, that's a huge jump from what the Gemara said. The Gemara said a Tinoik doesn't even realize what he's touching. The Rambam says here, he realizes what he's touching, but he doesn't worship over the Zara. There's no Chashash Nisuch, so be allowed. The Bali Ataisis took this even one step further, and this was a matter of great concern for them in their community, because Jews in those times were moneylenders. We just had someone from the shul who visited Poland, went on a trip I'm sure many of you have been on. I haven't been to Zoycha Lekach, I hope to one day to go, but he just came back from Poland, and he bought in Krakow a magnet of Jews with big noses and carrying, with all the evil tropes, carrying money bags, and it's like a magnet they use on refrigerators. Terrible, terrible. So he couldn't believe that it was there. It's in the souvenir shops. So I said to him, "Who buys these things? Like who?" He said he thinks it's only Jews who come to buy, because Jews can't believe that it's there. Every Jew who comes on these trips buys it. We're supporting this industry because we keep buying these things. Can you believe these things are still here? I don't know if the guy is still buying them. Even it's unfortunately we buy them because like wow, we can't believe it's here. Anyway, sorry. But traditionally, Jews in the times of the Balei Ataisis were moneylenders. What were they going to use as collateral for their lending of money? Could be a property, could be commodities, could be wine. And a lot of times they lent money having wine as the collateral. The problem is if the loan is not paid, what are you going to do, collect the wine? What good is that going to be for you? The wine is asa bahana. You can't benefit from the wine. You can't sell it. You can't trade it. So in the times of the Balei Ataisis, they introduced, this was a huge problem for them, economically. And they arrived at the following kula, which is that perhaps we should argue, even in lands where they lived, which was Christian lands, and again, that's a big dispute in the Rishonim, whether Christianity has the status of Avodah Zarah or not, vis-a-vis non-Jews. Is that called Avodah Zarah for non-Jews or not? The Rambam felt that it was, other Rishonim feel differently. But they believed, even if it was, but those Christians were not serving their God with korbanos, with animal sacrifices, or with wine libations. Now, it is true, of course, that wine does figure into Catholic services somehow, and I'm not sure if that's a ritual, or if that's a korban, if that would be prohibited in Hana or not. I don't know enough about that side of it. But the Balei Ataisis assumed that they did not use wine as part of a korban in a way that would prohibit it in Hana. So they were of the Avodah Zarah, but they didn't use wine as part of their service. So Chashash Nisuch did not exist. Ooh. Now that's one step further than the Rambam. Again, the Gemara said a Tinoch, who doesn't even realize what he's touching. There's no Chashash Nisuch, it's Mutar and Hana. The Rambam said anyone who's a non-Jew, who is an adult, who does realize what he's touching, but he doesn't worship Avodah Zarah, him also is permitted. The Balei Ataisis is taking even one step further. Even if he is an Avodah Zarah, but he doesn't use wine in a way that would prohibit the wine, it could also be permitted. And that was a kula that many of the Rishonim arrived at. Now, Rabbeinu Tam is not happy with this kula because it's so far away from what the Gemara said. The Gemara said a Tinoch who doesn't even realize what he's touching. This guy realized what he's touching. He isn't even Avodah Zarah. But Rabbeinu Tam, at the end of the day, said that was the minig. The minig was to be meikel, and this was a huge economic concern because they were lending money with the wine as collateral. So they did allow it. They did allow it based on that svara. Taisus there at the last few lines, as in Taimar, Kevin the Gazra Nisa Chayiv the Kachavim, since this is a Gzeira the Rabbanon of Stam Yenim, that is prohibited not only in a Shisiya, but it's prohibited in Hana, just because the reason doesn't apply, they don't use this as part of their why my patience and avoid the Zara, the Gzeira should still apply, just because the reason for Yom Tov Sheni or for, you know, some other Gzeira the Rabbanon doesn't apply, the Gzeira continues to apply, unless a later Bezin that's greater in number and in wisdom will come and uproot, will come and overturn that initial gzera, davar shebe minyan, tzarich minyan achar hatira. So just because the reason doesn't apply, why does the iser of stam yenam fall away? The iser hana. So the Taisus concludes in the last line, the yishlema, the gozru ela hamenaschem. The gzera was only on those religions and those individuals that use nisach hayayin. V'kem in the hashtolo havimenaschem, avedis kechavim yesh litlos laheter. Since nowadays it's not common in the circles, even of Avdei Avdei Zara, to use wine libations, it is permitted, even if they are technically Avdei Avdei Zara, because it's not part, they don't use it in a way that would prohibit it in Hana. This is quoted by the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch says, quotes the Rambam, that if they're Yishma'ilim, they don't have the status of Avdei Avdei Zara, then the wine is permitted just like a Tinoik, who doesn't realize what he's touching. There's no Chashash Nisuch here too, there's no Chashash Nisuch. And then the Rambam quotes from the Baalei Tosfos that if it says over here in the second line of Oyz Zion, it's Sim Kuf Chav Gimel Sif Aleph. The Magor if they could chavim beyond Shalanu, ain't no asa banar rak b'shasiya. It's only asa banar, not in drink. Only us are in drinking because of Bnei Seim. Intermarriage certainly still exists, but what prompted the Yisra Hanoa was a chashash nisuch. Maybe it's used for avayt zara that does not exist, and therefore the Stam Yayin is permitted in Hanoa. Now the Ramah doesn't give it his full endorsement. He says v'toyv la'achmir. It's good to be machmir. See, we make on Nisar Hanah, but it's best to be machmir. The Pesach Tshuva quotes from those who are a little bit more lenient. The general attitude of the Paiskim is, and this is the, you know, I'd say the prevalent stance, is that if it's b'makom hefsid, it can be allowed. Shalai b'makom hefsid, we really shouldn't rely on it. This comes up, Rabbi say, all the time. There aren't so many Jewish moneylenders I know of who are taking Stam Yenim as collateral. But where it does come up, which has, was common in times of the Baalei Tosfos, does come up quite often, is a person is in a service industry or some other business and making deals with clients and customers, and they will give as a gift of goodwill. I ship you a case of wine, probably usually quite expensive wine. It's not, you know, it's a Moscato d'Asti. It's usually quite expensive wine, and it's to show, you know, their appreciation. What is the Jew, what is you know, Yankala going to do with this case of Stam Yenim, however much it costs per bottle? So he said, well, I'll give it to my super. I'll give it to, I can't drink it, but let me give it to someone else. I'll give it back to the wine store and trade it for kosher wine. That's called benefiting from the wine. Are we allowed to benefit from Stam Yenim, wine that's owned by non-Jews or handled by non-Jews? So that's the Shaila. So B'makam Hefzid, it can be allowed. Shalom B'makam Hefzid really shouldn't be done. That's the answer. If you give it to your super, he's going to do favors for you. You give it to you know, anybody who works for you. He's going to do, now he's going to say, whoa, thank you for doing that. Now I'm going to do something nice for you. So you'd have to leave it for someone you don't know. Like, leave it by the Hefker table. If the guy have a Hefker table, I don't know if they have that, you know. But you'd have to leave it for them, and they wouldn't even know who took it. Then you wouldn't be deriving benefit. Somebody asked me, can you throw it out? Is that Baltashkis, or better to leave it than, yeah, I don't know, it's interesting, Shaila. But you really shouldn't derive benefit unless there's a Hefsid, unless there's a Hefsid. If you'd ask me, a gift that's unsolicited, that's really not in lieu of payment, is not called Hefsid. Let's say a guy gives me a box of wine, a case of wine, it costs $10,000. It costs a lot of money. To throw it out is a Hefsid. But I did nothing, you know, this wasn't in lieu of paying me $10,000. He did a sign of, so that's not called Hefsid. They came from nowhere, it goes back to nowhere. You know, offer, I'll tell you, I'll offer Toshuv. However, if the guy really owes me a favor, I went out of my way for this guy. He should have written me a check, and instead he gave me a case of wine. Then I think there's a legitimate argument to be made that that's called hefsid meruba, to lose the wine entirely. You'd be allowed to trade it for kosher wine or to give it to someone you know in return for another favor. Meaning, if the guy did this for me because he really owed me, then I'm deserving of something, and instead he gave me wine. That's called hefsid.
But
because when people give gifts, you don't, beggars can't be choosers. You don't get a right to say, your parents have a custom of buying you a birthday gift on your birthday. Your grandparents, they bring you a nice gift. They say, ah, here you are, Zach. What are you going to say? That's very nice. I'd prefer a check. Can you take it and return it? It doesn't work that way. Yeah. That's not how gifts work.
If he owes you money, then.
Not if he owes you money. If he owes you money, you have the right to say. But a lot of times there's, I do you a favor in business. I didn't have to do it. I went out of my way. Yeah, and I schwitzed for you and this and that. And instead, he sends me a case of wine. So he really, he could have written me a check. He could have done something else nice for me. He owes me. You know, but not in a way that is formal. You know, I'm not taking the wine and shove a kesef paying back for a loan, but yeah, so you get the idea. Okay, so this is one instance where the chashash nisuch might not exist. What about a situation with a chashash benoiseim? So then we said, right, it might only be asabachi on shasiyah, not asabana. What about the opposite situation where the chashash benoiseim doesn't exist? Where could you have that? So the Gemara says in Masech the Schulin that there are certain instances where we have people who are unreligious who don't keep the Torah and the mitzvahs, what's known as a mumar. A person can violate so many of the Torah and the mitzvahs that he loses his status of a Yisrael vis-a-vis certain halachas. What we call mumar dino ka'akum. If the person is a mumar la'avodah zarah, has the status of mumar l'kol Torah kulo, or if he violates the majority of the mitzvahs of the Torah, or if he violates mumar l'chal al Shabbos b'farhesia, he violates Shabbos in public in front of 10 people as the status of Dino Ka'akum. He forfeits his Kedushas Yisrael vis-a-vis certain issues. Now, he's Jewish, Yisrael Shechata, Afal Pi Shechata Yisrael, who you can marry his daughter. If he marries, Kedusha of Kedushan, he require a get. But, vis-a-vis certain halachas, he's the status of a non-Jew. His Shechita is no good. Right? Fine. So the Gemara says, Masech L'Skulin, that a Mumar, La'avodah Zarah, is a mumar l'kol Torah kula, and if he handles wine, it has the status of stam yenam. Asa b'achila, asa b'ana. Now, that's a huge chiddush, because he's a Jew. You can marry his daughter. So what prompted the issue of stam yenam was b'noiseim, was because it will lead to intermarriage. Here, you can marry his daughter. There wouldn't be a problem. Why do we have stam yenam by a person who's a mumar l'avodah zarah? So the Ramban explains that it's because once we rendered him, declared him, has the status of a mumar dino ka'akum, the gzera applies across the board, we don't distinguish any longer, and even though b'noiseim doesn't apply, there's no fear of intermarriage, he has the status of dino ka'akum, and his wine will be stam yenam. Wow. Says Ramban over here, the bottom of Ois Ches, afo pi she'em b'noiseim iser chasus min ha'teira, even though there is no chashash b'noiseim of intermarriage, mikom makom k'goy gomer hu b'chal gzerosan. He's considered to be like a goy, and the wine that he touches would have the status of stam yenam. Now that's only a mumar l'avodah zarah. However, Rabbi Sai, the Shulchan Aruch over here, Simin Kuf Chav Daud, Sif Ches, quotes from a Tshuva of the Rashba, that a mumar, even if it's not a mumar l'avodah zarah, let's say it's a mumar l'chal Shabbos b'farhesia, a mumar in another area that has dino ka'akum, also the wine that he touches would have the status of stam yenam. That means anybody who's a mumar l'chal Shabbos b'farhesia, entirely not religious, the wine that he touches would have the status of stam yenam, like it was touched by a non-Jew. You can marry his daughter. Where's the chashash b'noiseim? Nonetheless, once he's dino ka'akum, we apply it across the board indiscriminately, and he has the status of dino ka'akum, and the wine that he touches would be stam yenam. Now the Chazon Ish disagrees over here. Ois Yud, the Chazon Ish writes, maybe the Gemara only formulated this principle vis-a-vis a mumar l'avodah zarah. Over here at the top of the second side of the page, miu yain shachil ol Shabbos ol kol Torah kula ve'eino oved akum hainir diyeno mutar. That's not the same as a mumar l'avodah zarah. Why? Because a mumar l'avodah zarah, maybe he actually used it for nisuch. So maybe that chashash nisuch exists if he worships avodah zarah. Here, the guy's Jewish. He doesn't keep Shabbos. There's no b'noiseim, but not only is there no b'noiseim, there's no chashash avodah zarah. He doesn't worship avodah zarah. So neither reason for yayin nesach applies. Neither the chashash b'noiseim, because he's Jewish, Yisrael shechat af b'shechat Yisrael, and the chashash nisuch doesn't exist. He doesn't worship avodah zarah. So the Chazon Ish argues, there, maybe, stam yenam should not apply. And if the non-religious Jew handles the wine, it should not necessarily have the status of stam yenam. When did the Gemara say that does apply? Is when he's a mumar l'avodah zarah, so at least the chashash nisuch exists. But not if he's a mumar l'chal Shabbos b'farhesia. Hatzlacha rabba. Hatzlacha rabba, shkoyach. Oh, that's the argument of the Chazon Ish. It's against the Shulchan Aruch. However, in the end of the day, even despite the protest of the Chazon Ish, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rashba that it applies across the board. Even if a person is a mumar l'chal Shabbos b'farhesia, not a mumar l'avodah zarah, the wine that he touches would have the status of stam yenam. Would have the status of stam yenam. There are we could have said that this is the case, by the way, if we're going to apply this across the board, wherever a person is mumer, dino ka'akum, we apply these gzeirois. So what about pasakum and bishalakum? What about food that's cooked by a mumer l'chal shabbos for hesia, or bread that's baked by a mumer l'chal shabbos for hesia? Should we say that the bread that he bakes and the food that he cooks is bishalakum and pasakum? So here, the Pisrei Tshuva and Oisir Alf and Oisir Beis quotes from the Tiferes L'Moisha, the Pasha Mumar Shori. No, Bishalakum, Pasakum are not the same as Tam Yenam. Tam Yenam was, you know, much more chamor because it was patterned after Yayin Nesach. That was the primary, the original Gzera. Because of Binoy Seyem, it's patterned after, you know, called the Tikkun Rabbanan Gehinde Reis Tikkun. These were later gzeros, bishulakum, pasakum, to distance us from intermarriage. So as long as intermarriage doesn't apply, the concern, because the person is a Jew, even though he's not religious, these isura would not kick in. So they would be permitted. And that's the way Rav Moshe Paskins and the Gris Moshe, pasakum, bishulakum doesn't apply to a non-religious Jew. However, the Darkei Tshuva over here, Darkei Tshuva was a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch written by the Munkacher Rebbe, where he collects many tshuvas. Like the Pisrei Tshuva, Pisrei Tshuva stops around the Chasam Sofer and the Nedev Yehuda, and the Darkei Tshuva has much more. So he quotes there from the Tshuva of the Maram Shik. The Maram Shik was one of the main Talmidim of the Chasam Sofer. So the Maram Shik and others felt, no, that these gzeiros should continue to apply even by a Mumar L'chal Shabbos before Hesia, who's not a Mumar L'Avay Dezara. Since your Mumar Dino Ka'akum, you forfeit your status of a Jew with regards to certain halachas. The gzera should apply because, and once they declared an isa derabanan of a pasakum bishalakum, a non-Jews, a person who's mumer dino ka'akum, they should apply indiscriminately, even though the chashash of ben oseyam, the fear of intermarriage, which is what prompted these isurim in the first place, doesn't exist with regards to these individuals. However, there could already be, you know, a difference between these things we already mentioned. That's why many poskim are lenient. And it seems to be, Rabbi Avadya cites the tshuva of the Rivash, where the Rivash makes the point explicitly that maybe we should distinguish between them. The Rivash, which predates the Maram Shik, is from the period of the Rishonim, says, nah, maybe it's only Stam Yenam, because that's patterned after Yaya Nesech. So that exists, you know, that we apply indiscriminately across the board. For anybody who's Mumar Dino Ka'akum, you're included in Xera. But if it's only because of Ben Oseyem, like Bishalakum, like Pasakum, maybe it wouldn't apply, and many Paiskim therefore are lenient. This is a hotly debated issue. However, Stam Yenam, wine that's handled by a non-religious Jew, really should have the status of Stam Yenam and be prohibited, both by Achila and Behanoah. The Gemara has it with regards to Amum Alav Adizara. The Rashba extended it even to Amum Alav Chal Shabbos for Hesia, even though the Chazon Ish felt you could distinguish between the two. Well, the Shulchan Aruch, in the end of the day, concludes like the Rashba. So Rabbi Yisai, this comes up all the time. How many times have you had a Shabbos meal with a non-religious Jew and you want to serve wine? You have them over for Kiruv, but at the end of the day, there's still a Mechal Shabbos before Hesia. Mechal Shabbos before Hesia, Dino Ka'akum. Can they handle the wine? Does all the wine have to be Yain Mavushal, which we'll get to in a second? Yain Mavushal is excluded from the prohibition of Stam Yenam. So if you have all Yain Mavushal, you could avoid the issue. Or I know some people who want to have nice fancy wine that's not Mavushal, but they have a Sarah Mashkim. They have one guy who pours all the wine, and no one else handles the wine. That's a nice way of handling it. Or you don't have to serve wine. Serve grape juice or something, okay? Or whiskey, right? Whiskey doesn't have this issue. However, if you want to be on the etzem issue of allowing him to handle the wine, let's say he did handle the wine, what should be the status of the wine, you know, in retrospect? So there are a number of, in Yanam over here that one could rely on Lakula. The first is, maybe we don't have a Mechal Shabbos Bifar Hesia anymore. See, the Malam and the Hoyle raises this issue, that's with David Zvi Hoffman, 150 years ago, maybe Mechal Shabbos for Hesia, it has to be done in public because that was a pirta. That was like a scene. Look at him. He's being Mechal Shabbos on our Jewish streets and creating a breach in the standards of the community. So they labeled him as Dino Ka'akum. Today, it's a surprise if people are Shomer Shabbos, right? That's the Chiddush. The Chiddush is not to be Mechal Shabbos. So maybe today we don't have Chilul Shabbos Bifar Hesia anymore. But more than that is, a much more compelling Sfara, Lamaisa, is, you could dispute that many people are Machal Shabbos for Hesia and they don't have a mind to deny a Kodesh Baruch Hu. They're interested in going to earn a Parnasa. They have other things they'd rather do. But they don't deny Hashem, and we know everything that's implied by being Machal Shabbos for Hesia. But I think the more common argument is that the Chazon Ish makes, that maybe most of the non-religious Jews today, the Chilonim, have the status of a Tinok Shenishba, which is the concept the Gemara has at the beginning of Perek Lagodim, Masechta Shabbos. of a non-Jew who was a Jew who was raised Bein HaNochrim, a Tinok Shenishbai, who was taken captive and raised by Nochrim. He never received a proper Jewish education, even realized what he was doing was wrong. So a person in that who's a Tinok Shenishbai is not held responsible, he is not punished for the Averos that he does. It's only a Shoigeg, I forgot. Who's punished? He has to bring a Karban. Tinok Shenishba is entirely exempt. He's off the hook. No punishment. Because how are you supposed to learn? He didn't know. So the Chazon Ish treats all Chilonim today, all non-religious Jews today, as a Tinok Shenishba. Other parties can dispute that. Moshe, Shlomo Zalman, and others. Shlomo Zalman debatable, but whatever. Because, maybe, a Tinok Shenishba is one who never heard of Yiddishkeit. He didn't know these things are prohibited. He never heard of Judaism. Most non-religious Jews today know about from Jews. They know about the restrictions that they keep. They certainly can receive an education. It is available to them. And they are familiar with some of the... I don't think they're as familiar as we think that they are. I don't think that they're paying as much attention to us as we think that they are. But it certainly is out there more. And therefore, some Paiskim are not as convinced of this svara, that they should have this status of a Tinok Shenishba. But there's another argument that could be made, is that maybe Mumar Adino Ka'akum is not a punishment. See, a Tinok Shenishba is not held responsible for his actions, so therefore he's not punished. No skila, no, even, you know. No karbanos. He's not a shoygeg. He there's no way he could have known better. Is Mumar Adino Ka'akum a punishment? That we should say, okay, you're exempt now? You don't have the status of Adino Ka'akum? Or is Mumar Adino Ka'akum a consequence? A reality? You don't keep Torah mitzvahs, memeila, you're Dino Ka'akum, not as a punishment that we can let you off the hook because you have a good excuse. This is just a reality. Mumar, Dino Ka'akum. Yeah, there's no punishment. This is not a punishment. This is just a reality. It's a consequence of your actions. And that's another argument that could be made, which is another debated issue. So it's a whole big problem. How to treat non-religious Jews today vis-a-vis making a minion, vis-a-vis many, many other halachas that have to do with how we should view non-religious Jews today, one of them being this issue. What should be the status of the wine that they touch? So at least here in Chutzlars, we try and be careful, to be careful about this, that the wine, at least it's not mavusho. I don't know what they do in Eretz Yisrael, where yain mavusho isn't as common, and Jews are much more common. But here, at least, we're a little bit more careful. Some are careful. If one is not, there's what to rely on. Many, many, many treat non-religious Jews today as a Tinok Shenishba, even vis-a-vis Mumar Dino Ka'akum, and wine that's touched by a non-religious Jew would be permitted. But there's a reason to be machmir as well. Yeah?
If we're careful about not these people in here, then would we also, like, regarding wine, would we also be careful with them, like, not including them in the minyan?
Interesting.
There's a route back to the same thing.
Yeah, they are related. Yeah. Yeah. Minyan is different, though, because Minyan is derived from Kairach himself, because he bought mitocha Eda, Zois, Vachalasum, Kiroga, Eda, and then the Pasuk says by Megillah, by the Meraglim, that they're called Eda, and the Meraglim were 10. That's how we derive a whole source of Minyan, is from the Meraglim, and Kuzei Roshava to Kairach. None of them were religious. They were all by way of Eda. So Moshe's a tshuva, and he goes, Moshe, you see from here, you don't need to be, you could be a balavera and still be mistarif to a minyan. So the tzarif l'minyan is related, yeah. Part of a bigger discussion, though, yeah. Yeah. But here, it's easy to be cheshish, you know. Why not? I've seen the Sarah Mashkin work very well. Well, yeah, the balabas walks around with a bottle, he pours for everyone, it seems very nice, he's all friendly to pour. No one thinks that you're being careful, and he's just the way he always does. I have one guy, all the wine stays behind him. No one touches a bottle except for him. He's very careful to go around a few times during the meal, refilling. Very, very nice. It can be done very nicely if you do it with seichel. Okay. We discussed who's considered to be a non-Jew vis-a-vis these halachas. How does the non-Jew have to handle the wine in a way that will become prohibited? So you already saw the Gemara Maseches Megillah, Rabbi. If he even touches the wine, he handles the wine, it's prohibited. What if he looks at the wine? So the Dakei Tshuva quotes, that's the Munkacher Rebbe's collection of tshuvas, on Yoredeya, quotes from the Shulah HaKadosh, even if he looks at the wine, it's prohibited, because maybe he had in mind the Nisuch, in mind to use it for his Avodah Zarah. And that's why in some Jewish wine factories, they're careful not to have any non-Jews working there at all. Some are careful not to even have any non-religious Jews working there at all, to avoid all shilas, but not to have non-Jews there who can even look at the wine, even if they're not handling the wine. Okay, but what about, that's a chumrah, but what about touching the wine? If they touch the wine, they touch the wine directly, wine, not the bottle, they touch the wine directly, then the wine would be prohibited in Hanah. If they just touch the outside of the bottle, we'll get to in a second, okay? So there are a few limitations, though, over here. We're careful not to have an Anjou handle any wine that's not Mavusha, which is a very, very nice hachaka. It's beautiful. We should continue that way. Jews should be careful about wine that's not Mavusha, that should not be handled at all by Anjou. Shouldn't be touched, not the wine, not the bottle. Very nice. What is the etzem halacha? What is the real halacha? So the real halacha is there are a few limitations on what is actually prohibited. If it happened, you know, how should we treat the wine after it happened? It's not only b'diyeva, but this is actually my etzem halacha. People in general are a little bit more careful because the details of these halachas are complicated and it's hard to figure out what happened sometimes after it happened. But it's a good idea to be more careful with the wine. Some people have the non-mavusha wine, they put it away in a closet that's locked up. It's very nice. But what is the etzem halacha? So the etzem halacha is, Shulchan Aruch says over here, Siman Kuf Chav Ches Sif Tes, that if the Nakri is carrying a closed bottle of wine, now this doesn't mean sealed, closed. Heavy harvey kachavim noy shol yain imakum lamakum v'oiches pi anoy biyadoi mutter. And the Shach explains v'hainu shehu sasum. If it's closed, because they would not be menasek the wine while the bottle was closed. It wouldn't be menasek the wine. That's one of the primary concerns, is a chashash nisuch. And you can't be menasek the wine while it's closed. So it would be permitted if the wine was closed. It doesn't have to be sealed, necessarily. Where did the seal come from? Seal came from, because what if I leave the wine alone with the non-Jew? I don't know what he did with the wine. So the Gemara in Masechet Sefer Yetzirah treats this like yichud. A lot of the principles of yichud apply here to leaving a non-Jew alone with the wine. So for example, if someone's coming in and out of the room, then you could even leave the door closed, right? Yoytze v'nichnas, he's coming in and out. Or the person is afraid. They're going to lose their job if they do something wrong. So if I say to the help in the house, if you touch the wine, open the wine, you're going to lose your job. You are not permitted to touch and open the wine. Okay, then they know. I'm not going to open the wine. Why would they risk their job to open the wine? It's not worth it to drink a sip of wine. They're not going to do it. So if I say to them, the fear of losing their job, and I come in and out, I'm right there. So if they carry a closed bottle of wine, even if the wine is not mavushal, the wine is technically permitted. We, when we put the wine in their hands, where there's no Jew supervising, where there's no fear they're going to lose their job, then you require a double seal. Then you require a double seal to make sure they didn't tamper with it. Okay, so if it's in the house and it's closed and the guy moves it from place to place, certainly in the refrigerator slides it around from place to place while the bottle is closed, Meikar, I think that should be permitted. Let's say the bottle is open and you need a seal if you put it in their hands and there's no Jew watching. Let's say the bottle is open. The bottle is open. It's a little bit more complicated. But if the non-Jew, the Shulchan Aruch says over here, in Sif Yud Ches, at the end of Os Tezayin over here, Nato Avi Kachavim Kli Shal Yain V'Hig Biyoy, he picks it up. If he pours or shakes it, then it's Aser. But if he just picks it up, Hig Biyoy V'Loy Sich Sech V'Loy Naga, now shaking was a kind of Nisuch. They would, you know, shake it and then they would pour it out to the Avodah Zarah. So shaking and pouring, there's a Chashash Nisuch. Just picking it up alone is fine. Is permitted. So if he picks up even an open bottle, he just picks it up, is permitted. You don't have to throw it out. The Ramah writes, certainly if he just touches the outside of the bottle. If he touches the wine, that's usur. But that's if you touch the wine itself. What if you just touch the outside of the bottle? That's fine, even if it's open. So closed bottle can be moved around as long as there's a Jew there watching to make sure, you know, that he knows he's not supposed to open it. Even if he shakes it, yeah? If it's open, then if they pick it up or they touch the bottle, it's okay. If they shake it, or they pour it, then it becomes a problem. Which could be in a restaurant, right? It can't serve, it can't pour you wine. That's certainly problematic. A big problem. That's why having non-mavusha wine in restaurants creates lots and lots of problems. Typically the waiter will pour the wine, so that's a big issue. You have to worry about that. So, but if they just pick up the bottle, or they just touch the outside of the bottle, that should be okay. What comes up a lot is what if they move the bottle from the table to the counter while it's open? So here, the Ramah is willing to be lenient. Shulchan Aruch would be machmer. That's called tiltul al yidei davar acher. He did shake the wine. It was, you know, that was tangential, though. He didn't have a mind to shake it. He had a mind to move the bottle. Probably inevitably shake somewhat because of the momentum of moving in a, you know, a bottle of open liquid. But he didn't have a mind to shake it. So Ramah is willing to be lenient. But tiltul al yidei davar acher, in conjunction with the fact that many are ovdei avodah zarah today, right, that overriding svar of the Ramah who said, many are ovdei avodah zarah today, don't worship, don't use the wine for yayin nesach anymore. So that concern really doesn't even exist. So, you know, in combination of all those factors, the Ramah is even willing to allow him, if he moved the wine from place to place while the wine was open, it should be allowed. It's really problematic if he shakes the wine deliberately or pours the wine. Okay, so there's coolers to be had. If you by accident you see the kiddush, a bottle, it shouldn't be there, but a bottle of non-mavusha wine, a way to move it from table to table, make a din is probably allowed, you don't have to throw it out. Certainly if it's closed and they're told not to open the wine, they can even move it from place to place. But it is a nice harchaka that we should be careful that the wine should not be around non-Jews in order not to run into problems. One last halacha, Rabbi said, it's very relevant to all these issues, we've mentioned it once or twice, is if the wine is mavushal, that's over here, Ois Yudches, the Gemara Masechtos by the Zohar Lamed Amud Aleph. If the wine is mavushal, you don't have to worry about Yayin Esech. You don't have to worry about Stam Yenam. Why? They wouldn't use it as part of their karbonos. Why? So therefore, wasn't included in the Gzeirah of Yayin Esech. Why? Why wouldn't they use it in their karbonos? Why would they use it as Yayin Esech, which of course Stam Yenam is a derivative of Yayin Esech. It's related. It's one of the reasons we have Stam Yenam. It's Chashash Nisuch. Why wouldn't they use it? And there, Yayin Esech, in which case we could say it doesn't apply to Stam Yenam, doesn't apply also if it's Mavusho. So that's a Machlekes Rishonim, two opinions. One opinion is that the Ramban has earlier. The Ramban says, if you look back at the Lamed Vavim and Beis, the last line of the Ramban and Ois Dalet, the Ramban says, V'zeh shaloi gazer b'mavusho, v'sheinu misnasech ve'eino matzoi kokach, lochus lochus b'noi seyim. It wasn't common. No one had this. Why would you make mavusho wine? They thought it was inferior, whatever. But why would you make it? So it's a milsa d'loi shkicha. It's not common. And the Gemara is a rule, milsa d'loi shkicha lo gazu bei rabbanan. It's not common, therefore they never prohibited it. That's the Ramban. The Rashban, the Rush says the same thing. Because it wasn't common, they never included it. The Rush gives a the Rashba over here, Oisi Tess, and Taurus Habayis HaOrech says, no, it's because it was inferior wine, and therefore they didn't use it. Not that it wasn't common, and they didn't include it in the Gzeirah, the technicality, Mishlo Shkikul HaGazer Ve'Rabban, it's because it was inferior wine. It changed. When you cook it, it changes. It's inferior wine. They wouldn't use it. They wouldn't use it after the Yayin Esach. We'll get back to that in a second. Okay, so Rabbi said, Yayin Mavushal is permitted. That's though, right? That only applies if the wine came, was handled by the non-Jew after it was Mavushal. What if the non-Jew produces the wine and then cooks the wine? What if the non-Jew produces the wine and then cooks the wine? Who does that? A wine company or grape juice company that's owned by non-Jews. Who does that? Welch's, I believe, is not owned by Jews. It's owned by non-Jews. So for years, Welch's, decades, Welch's was never had Hashgacha. It's owned by non-Jews. How can non-Jew produce kosher wine products, kosher grape products? So the truth of the matter is, in the Har Tzvi, that's what Tzvi Pesach Frank has a diuk, a beautiful diuk from the language of the Rambam over here, Oyschaf, where the Rambam only brings the heter of Yayin Mavusho vis-a-vis wine that's touched, that's handled by a non-Jew. Wine that's touched by a non-Jew. You know why? Touching is not binoseyem. What is touch? Touching is because maybe he was miznasech et l'avay dezara. Maybe he handled it and used it for avay dezara. But Yayin Mavusho doesn't help you, perhaps, for the wine that's owned by the non-Jew. That's binoseyem. What does the fact that it's Mavusho have to do with binoseyem? I might come to socialize, we might drink together, I might want to marry his daughter so I could have an endless supply of this wine. What does it have to do with the fact that it's Mavusho? And they wouldn't use it, Al-Gabi and Mizbeach. What does it have to do with the fact that it's Mavusho? So Mavusho might not help for wine that's actually owned by the non-Jew. I might marry his daughter to have an endless supply of this wine. When does the heter of Yan Mavusho apply to wine that was handled by the non-Jew but not owned by the non-Jew? That's prompted by the Chashash Nisuch. That's a distinction the Stipler has in the Kilos Yaakov and Avodah Zarah and others. That wine that's owned by the non-Jew, produced by the non-Jew, that's Benoiseyem. Wine that's handled by the non-Jew, Maga Nachri, is prompted really because of the Chashash Nisuch. So when does Yayin Mavusho get you out of a problem, because they wouldn't use it, Al-Gabi, their Mizbeach, is vis-a-vis wine that was handled by the non-Jew, not wine that was necessarily owned by the non-Jew. So you can't have non-Jews producing kosher wine products simply because it's Mavusho. However, Amayisha is a Chuvah Nigras Amayisha, he explains the reason why this is so, is because once the non-Jew produces the wine, Rabbi Yisai, it becomes usser. It's usser. The Welch's makes the grape juice, it's usser. Now they're going to cook it. So what? The Isser resides with this grape juice even after you cook it, because once it's sent in, it cannot be removed simply by cooking it. But, Ramesha says, what if the non-Jew, cooks the grapes before they become wine and then squeezes them to make grape juice? So it was Mavusha before he ever produced it as a wine product. Maybe that would be permitted. And that's why other kashrus organizations started to give a hashgacha on Welch's grape juice based on this tshuva from Ramesha, that if they cook the wine, not after they make it into wine, once the non-Jews making the wine, it's already wine, it's prohibited. It's not going to help the fact that it became a Mavusha, because B'chashash ben Oseim still exists. But what can you do? He cooks it before, right? The heter, yeah, Mavusha was only for Magen Ochri. But what can he do? He could cook it before. It never became wine in the first place. Never became wine that was prohibited in the first place. It's true, but I say, you could argue with it. But that's what Moshe said. If he cooks it before it ever became wine, so then the Bishul is not undoing this, the Isar Stam Yenam. It nips it in the bud before it ever sets in, and that would be permitted. That's why you have those giving hashgachas on grape juice produced by non-Jews. Rabbi said, but the final issue is, what's called the Ayin Mavusha? How hot does it have to be? So if you look over here, Oysur Ches, the Ramban has two opinions. One opinion is, Yad Soyveres Boy. That's the sheer Bishul in Kol Tarakua. Until when your hand would recoil from the heat, around 175, around there. It's somewhere between 110 and 190, right? So some take a lower shear, some take a higher shear. There's actually a machlekes between Kedem and Rav Moshe. Kedem, the original Mashgiach on Kedem grape juice, was at Salem or Rav. If you ever read the Hashgachas on Kedem grape juice, you'll see Salem still gives Hashgachas. I think they'll have the OU too now, other Hashgachas. But the main Rabbi Mashgiach for Kedem was Salem. So the Salem or Rav, in order to make wine, the Yad Mavusha had to be 190. Rav Moshe disagreed. Rav Moshe held it was enough if it's 175. Machlekes, and what's called the Yad Soledis boy. It's a huge machlekes, hapaiskim lamaisa. What's cool? How hot is the hand recoil? Different pipes may have different shiurim. The Gemara never says how hot it is. So somewhere between 110, the chumra b'cheshish to 110, the kula until 190. So the tzeilim b'rav held 190, Rav Moshe held 175. There's another sheet in the pipeskim, though, that the Ramban already says, no, maybe it has to be boiling, 212. And some pipeskim go with that. That's where Shlomo Zalman has the Micha Shlomo. Rav Sternbach and the Shuvas van Hagis. Has to be boiling. So Rabbi said, I think that this goes back, not me, I think it's obvious, it goes back to what's the reason the Yain Mavusha is permitted? Why is it excluded from the Isar of Stam Yenam? Is it because it's inferior wine? If that's the case, to make it inferior, you probably have to boil to 212. That changes the wine. That's a Shinoi Tam. If it just becomes Yad Soledes Bo for a second, that's not going to be a Shinoi Tam. If it's because it's because Yad Mavusha wasn't common, it's a Milsa Goy Shkichol, a Gazabay Rabban, was never included in the Gzerah, the minute it becomes Yad Soledes Bo, it's Yad Mavusha, wasn't included in the Gzerah, now it already becomes permitted, because that was never what they were Gozer on. And that's already a Yad Soledes Bo. So maybe it goes back to this Machlaik as we showed him. It has a huge Nafkamina Lomaisa, the Rabbi said, because no wine is put into a pot and cooked on top of a fire. The wine goes through pasteurization, which is a flash heating. They run it through hot coils, gets heated for a second, and then immediately cooled down to pasteurize the wine. That's what we call today Yain Mavushal, means it was pasteurized. How hot is pasteurization? 175. So if you make it like Rav Moshe, the Yain Mavushal is a Yad Soledes Bo. And what's the shear for Yad Soledes Bo? 175, all pasteurized wine is Yain Mavushal. If you see on a bottle of wine Yain Mavushal, that means 175. It's Yain Mavushal according to Rav Moshe. According to the Tzeilim Arav, Lavdavka, Tzeilim Arav held 190. And according to Shlomo Zalman, and the opinion of Rabbi Yashiv as well, is none of this is Yain Mavusho. None of it is Yain Mavusho. That's why Shlomo Zalman held that the het of Yain Mavusho Kemat doesn't apply today. The whole het of Yain Mavusho is because the wine was inferior. No one would drink it. Today he says it's all over the place. People love Yain Mavusho. They can barely tell the difference between Yain Mavusho and Yain Sheinu Mavusho. Some people think they can't tell the difference. And all expensive wines are typically Yain Sheinu Mavusho. But he said, you can't really tell the difference. It's not inferior wine anymore, pasteurized wine. So Shlomo Zalman held the whole heter of Yain Mavushal doesn't apply. Rabbi Yashiv had the same thing. In Eretz Yisrael, the heter of Yain Mavushal is not as popular as it is here in Chutz La'aretz. Here in Chutz La'aretz, we typically follow Rav Moshe. We feel if it was pasteurized, it's considered to be Yain Mavushal. You could be lenient. You don't have to worry about Stam Yenam once it's Yain Mavushal. But there are those places who are a little bit more machmir on this, that the wine, pasteurized wine is not considered to be Yain Mavushal, and therefore even Yain, what we call Yain Mavushal, you still have to be careful for some of these problems.